Crusade Channel News. News you can trust because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Youngblood coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Friday, October 6, 2017. Puerto Rico's healthcare system is in dire straits following Hurricane Maria. Then I'll have your stock market report and saint of the day. The investigation continues into Las Vegas mass murderer Stephen Paddock and what is in store for the Gulf this weekend with Tropical Storm Nate. It has been just over 2 weeks since Hurricane Maria slammed into Puerto Rico, knocking out communication towers and power to water systems and decimating the electric grid. At the time Maria hit, 75% of Puerto Rico's hospitals were running on generators due to the effects of Hurricane Irma on the island. Puerto Rican medical officials are telling USA Today that their health system is currently, quote, on life support. Some of the major problems they are experiencing are a direct result of the lack of communication and lack of transportation on the island. It is difficult to transfer patients from the smaller facilities to the larger ones. In order for a hospital transfer to take place, a small-town hospital administrator has to drive his car to the ambulance company and arrange for the patient to be transferred. Then there are the usual complications regarding payment for services. Large medical centers are overwhelmed because the lack of triage and communication between hospitals has resulted in more people showing up at larger hospital facilities. Lastly, doctors are hesitant to discharge their ill patients into places where unsanitary conditions exist, and there are few options for transportation should the need arise. 64 of the 69 hospitals on the island are operating at least partially, and only 17 of those are connected to the power grid. The rest are running on generators. Only 14% of antennas and 26% of cell towers are operating. Only one cardiothoracic surgeon, Dr. Orlando Lopez de Victoria, remains on the island. The rest left before the hurricane hit. He said, quote, I decided to stay because I love my country, my family, and my patients. But he describes very tragic situations, such as one patient whose operation was delayed because there was no gasoline to run the vehicle to transfer her to the hospital. By the time she arrived, her heart was too weak and she did not survive the surgery. He described one patient who returned to the hospital with a severely infected wound because there is no water to shower with. It is cases such as these which have resulted in the island's death toll being increased from 16 to 34. Here is a portrait of the situation on the ground in Puerto Rico right now.
Water every day. What we're doing, like today, we're going to find water for, you know, for the toilet or for, you know, wash, you know, the stuff. And the next day, we're going to do gasoline. The next day, we're going to the supermarket. You know, to try, but it's a lot of, you know, or go to the bank. Right now, postal office not working, so nobody can send anything for us. So I have a bank account in the United States, so that's what my family, you know, they send me something and I can buy something. That's the only way.
So each of those activities is a whole day activity?
Whole day. The whole day. I'll start my day by 6, sometimes 5:45 in the morning. We do, you know, something in the house, do the toilets, and I go to visit my mom. You need water, what do you need for doom? And I go, but when I get home, like 7, we get out to play with the, you know, neighborhood, to play dominoes or do something. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. I'm tired.
Nobody has come to our village. We live in the village here in town. Nobody's from census to see if anybody died or didn't die. Nobody's come to our homes, not even to give us a bottle of water. Nothing.
So how you survive one day to day?
Oh, one meal a day. Everybody here is on one meal a day. And it is very sad. Don't make me talk about that. Because everybody's just helping one another. You know, everybody cooks, we feed everybody, we got water, you know, we just share everything.
No, so it's been really hard.
Oh, very hard.
Yeah, we've been seeing about 200 patients per day. Everything from heart attacks to, like you said, a lady who had a stroke, severe uncontrolled diabetes. We got a lady now with a sugar of 600. That's typically what we see. They've lost their insulin, they've lost their medications. Uncontrolled hypertension. We've been doing about 4 or 5 castings per day from fractures, falls before the during the hurricane or after the hurricane. A lot of different wounds, lacerations from people trying to clean debris, uncontrolled asthma. We had one lady, because they have no access to electricity, she was homebound on oxygen, and oxygen levels too low, so we just had to, we tried to stabilize her, then we had to send her out by ambulance. So a lot of psychiatric issues, some patients who are depressed, anxious, post-traumatic stress type illnesses, just everything and anything.
It's hard because I don't know who takes care of these people once we leave, so we're hoping that there's another team that comes in, or some of the local doctors can get back on their feet and start seeing patients again. But overwhelmingly what we're hearing is that a lot of the patients do have good medical care and they have primary care doctors. It's just they're not up and running, they're not working, and the resources aren't here. They need to drive 30 minutes to an hour to get the care that they need, and they don't have gasoline to get there. So we're sort of stuck in this area without the resources that they need. So
there's definitely a discord between what are the needs of the community and what is the aid that's coming in. But that's a short term, right? So we have to think about what's going to be happening in the next couple of months. I know that our organization, CARES, is going to be working with children and adolescents to make sure that they're still in a learning environment, even though their community may be destroyed or is in the process of being rebuilt. But as a whole, you know, Puerto Rico, more than the aid that we may or may not receive, it's about how are we able to become productive again? Because we need to stimulate our economy. We have a failing economy, we know this. We have certain restrictions because we are a territory of the United States and we're subject to the laws of the Congress. But we can't be a dependent country, and we most definitely don't want to be one. So we also need to think in the long term of if we are going to be rebuilding, how do we actually give the tools to the people so that we can rebuild our own economy, not only the infrastructure.
The new jobs report came out today, and CNBC reports that the U.S. economy lost 33,000 jobs, even though unemployment fell to 4.2%. Economists who had spoken with Reuters had been expecting an increase of 90,000 jobs. The effects of Hurricanes Harvey and Irma are partially to blame for the loss of jobs. For example, restaurants and bars lost 105,000 positions alone when workers were let go from their jobs due to the effects of hurricane damage. Zero Hedge reports that this is the first decline in jobs in 7 years. After historical revisions, in which July non-farm payroll declined over 50,000 and August gained 13,000, it is estimated that over the last 3 months, there has been an average job gain of 91,000. And now, here's Reuters' Fred Katayama to tell you how the markets fared yesterday.
Make it four in a row. Wall Street's three big indexes rising to fresh record highs yet again Thursday. Eighth in a row for the S&P. Utilities and financial stocks leading the rally, which was aided by strong economic data. U.S. Bank Senior Portfolio Manager Eric Wiegand.
Today, you know, the real difference has been in the, you know, financials continuing to show strength. Technology's working well, so that a return to the fore for financials and technology has been really in a leadership role throughout the year.
More signs of strength in the economy. The U.S. trade deficit narrowed in August. Jobless claims fell more than expected last week, and new orders for manufactured goods rose in August. Among the day's top gainers on the S&P 500, Constellation Brands and Netflix. Strong demand for beer, especially its Corona and Modelo brands, drove Constellation's quarterly profit up 42%. Netflix's stock rose after the video streaming company hiked its monthly fees for some of its subscription plans. Microsoft rose after Canaccord Genuity upgraded its shares to buy. Utilities and energy shares pulled markets higher in Europe, but Germany's DAX finished just below break-even.
Today's quote of the day comes from St. Teresa of Avila. Truth suffers, but never dies. Coming up next after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor Blessed Rosemarie du Rocher. You're listening to Crusade News.
Hey folks, when I was a kid, being called a bookworm was an insult of the highest order. Today, people want to be called bookworm to solve the world's political problems. At the Founders Trading Post, we have the books you need to help solve the world's problems and save your soul, too. From Humility of Heart to Patrick Henry, American Statesman, get started on your bookworm bona fides today by browsing to mikechurch.com/books. Most of our books are also signed by the authors. Shop like a Jeopardy champion today at mikechurch.com/books or call 844-5-CRUSADE.
Born in 1811 in Saint-Antoine-sur-Richelieu, Canada, Eulalie de Rocher was the 10th of 11 children born into a farming family. She received her education from the Sisters of Notre-Dame and established the first Canadian parish sodality for young women. She was described as gentle and amiable, possessing charming modesty. At 19, Eulalie took over the household when her mother died. Originally, she had hoped to enter the Congregation of Notre-Dame, but her health was too poor. Bishop Bourget asked Eulalie to found a congregation of women which would devote themselves to Christian education. The fulfillment of this request would be the Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary. She took the name Marie-Rose and was a wise and saintly head of the religious congregation. Even in the midst of her order's own great poverty, she never ceased to concern herself with the needs of the poor. Marie-Rose du Rocher died at the age of 38 in 1849. Blessed Marie-Rose du Rocher, pray for us. Information continues to trickle out about the investigation into Las Vegas mass murderer Stephen Paddock, who took the lives of 58 concertgoers and injured nearly 500 on Sunday night at the Route 91 Harvest Festival concert. Investigators have been questioning Paddock's girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley, in Los Angeles. From MSNBC.
Yeah, Nicole, my colleague Julia Ainsley has dug out this nugget that she told investigators that Paddock would lie in his bed and sort of moaning in anguish, screaming, "Oh my God," you know, in severe mental distress. And another source of ours told us that, you know, that the theme of her interview was that he was in some kind of mental anguish. But still other sources are telling Pete Williams that they're not seeing anything that would have pushed him over the edge. You know, generally, as Clint said, in these mass shooter cases, you see a triggering event, something that happens in the person's life that really causes a mental deterioration. And so far, we're not seeing any evidence of that. And I think you asked a really important question. Why are we not hearing from authorities about his Google searches, about his emails? I don't know the answer to that. I think it's a good question. Was he trying to disguise? Is there not? I mean, yes, there's no social media trail, but what about his private email correspondence that they surely must have access to? Why aren't we hearing what's on that? And does that tell us anything? These are all open questions right now.
The FBI and Las Vegas police are investigating what Paddock was doing in the hour which elapsed between his shooting of the unarmed security guard inside the hotel and his room being breached by a SWAT team. They are also investigating the 6 media devices left behind by Paddock, in particular his internet browsing history. Leaked crime scene photos show that there was an exceeding amount of ammunition in his hotel suite, and it was reported yesterday that Paddock had been scouting out other music festivals in Las Vegas, Boston, and Chicago. Tropical Storm Nate, which left at least 22 dead in Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and Honduras, is expected to become a hurricane once it hits the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico. A state of emergency has been declared in the Central American countries where Nate has already passed. A state of emergency has also been declared in 29 Florida counties and in New Orleans, Louisiana, where Nate is currently expected to be headed. New Orleans has been struggling with its drainage system for some time, and locals are questioning whether the city's pumps are going to work if Nate takes direct aim at the city. The Associated Press reports New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu said that although, quote, substantial progress has been made in improving the system since early August, there is still a flood danger from heavy rains and storm surge. Here is the Weather Channel discussing the forecast for Hurricane Nate.
This is expected this weekend to gain strength and become a Category 1 as it nears the Gulf Coast. Here's a look at the 5 things you need to know about Tropical Storm Nate. We're tracking this very closely. Life-threatening flooding expected along Honduras and Nicaragua. This is expected to make landfall along the Gulf Coast very early Sunday. That's the timing right now. It still could change. Hurricane watches are posted from Louisiana to Alabama. Tracking, Nate, here it is moving across the Yucatan. By tonight, Cancun certainly needs to be on standby. This weekend, it is expected to strengthen. That would put it in the projected path of Grand Isle by very early Sunday morning. From there, it will move inland. Here's a look at the alerts we are seeing ahead of this storm. A hurricane watch is in effect. This does include New Orleans. Also, we do have a tropical storm watch, but also a storm surge watch that's in effect for the Gulf Coast as well. We're going to be watching that surge very closely.
In this Celestial Musings, Virginia is leading the way, and not in a good way. Danica Rome is the Democratic candidate for the Virginia House of Delegates. He is a longtime journalist from Manassas. He is trying to beat out incumbent Bob Marshall, who is known for having introduced the state's bathroom bill into the state legislature. Danica was born Dan. Yes, he claims that he is not running as a token candidate and wants to inject a reporter's eye into Richmond. But listen to just one of his ads. This ad is called Inspire.
I'm Danica Rome.
And I'm shooting my political campaign video in my bathroom.
I'm running for office because my identity shouldn't be a big deal.
So your identity shouldn't be a big deal, but you're making a big deal about your identity. Got it.
Because this shouldn't be newsworthy or political. This is just who I am.
Okay, did you hear that little shuffling in the background? Listen to it again.
Because this shouldn't be newsworthy or political.
I'm going to clue you in. What you don't see, because this is radio, and I'm playing a video for you, is Mr. Rome in his bathroom taking his magic woman pills. And if this is who he is a fraud, because he is not a woman. We don't need to take pills to, quote, be who we are, unless we are treating some diagnosed mental condition. Mr. Rome isn't treating a mental condition. He is changing his body to fit his delusion.
There are millions of transgender people in this country, and we all deserve representation in government.
But he said he's not the token candidate. And he isn't supposed to be running to represent all the LGBTQ people across the nation. He is supposed to be running to represent the people in his district. All of them. And he has every right to do that. But let's not make this into something it isn't.
So when I stand up on the State House floor and the speaker says, the gentlewoman from Manassas, LGBTQ kids everywhere will know they can succeed because of who they are, not despite it.
I thought he wasn't the token candidate. Okay, so now I'm going to play for you a second campaign ad, which just goes to illustrate the fact that he is running as a token candidate. He's not running on the issues. He's running on being a transgendered person while saying he's not running on being a transgendered person. Be aware that I have introduced clips from the former ad into this ad to simply illustrate my point.
I'm running for office because my identity shouldn't be a big deal.
My name is Danica Rome. I'm a Democratic candidate for the 13th District of the Virginia House of Delegates. Delegate Bob Marshall, who I'm running against in this race, he has authored 6 anti-LGBT bills just in the last 2 years alone, including the bathroom bill this year.
I'm running for office because my identity shouldn't be a big deal.
And he was the author of the 2006 constitutional amendment that banned all legal recognition for LGBT couples, not just marriage.
I'm running for office because my identity shouldn't be a big deal.
If he loses to a transgender woman, we'll show that a well-qualified, well-credentialed transgender woman is perfectly capable of defeating the most anti-LGBT legislator in the South.
I'm running for office because my identity shouldn't be a big deal.
And she can also deliver on the core quality of life issues that we have in the district, traffic, jobs, and schools.
Okay, why don't you talk about traffic, jobs, and schools then? Danica Rome is an extremely well-funded candidate. And I am aware that there is money coming into this campaign from out of state. The Washington Post reports that Danica Rome raised $85,637 between June 2nd and June 30th. Compare that with the $4,585 that Bob Marshall raised in that same time frame. Rome also has a strong grassroots strategy lined up. And so I'm going to play the rest of this ad so that you can hear what they're going to be doing to try to defeat the incumbent.
The three things that I really need the most from Victory Fund supporters, number one is to donate at danicafordelegate.com. Delegate Bob Marshall wins re-election every 2 years because he knocks on more doors and he has more voter contact than anyone else. We're going to undermine that this year, and we're going to absolutely overwhelm him on the ground. The third thing that you can do is phone bank for us. At danicaforddelegate.com, you can find a tab that's called Organize, and there's a sub-tab under that. It's called Make Calls for Danica. And you can literally call the people, our Democratic voters in the 13th District, follow the script on the right, and tell them where to vote on the left, and help us win this race. Representation is power, and we need more of it.
For more information on how to support the campaign of Delegate Bob Marshall, go to DelegateBob.com. I think he's going to need all the help he can get. Send me your news tips at news@VeritasRadioNetwork.com. Keep yourself tuned in to the Veritas Radio Network for king-size truth from radio-sized speakers. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel, serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News, live on your News Talk and Saints leader, the Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.